Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children Magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the world of ink.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Stories for Children show at BTR's World of Ink Network with your host, Jess Grenier, Chris Quinn Christopherson, and myself, of course, Irene Rose. It's truly an honor to be here with you today. It's Monday, August the 15th, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, Stories for Children can be listened to live at blocktalkradio.com/World of Ink Network, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you'd like, at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network and you'll find our shows on iTunes. We'll be taking your questions today through our chat room, or if you'd like to call in towards the end of the show, the number to call is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259.
Thank you, Irene. It's great to be here today. This is V.S. Grenier, and we have Chris joining us again after the crazy summer vacation. We missed you, Chris.
I know. Yeah. It's been crazy. Thanks.
Yeah, but I know. We were just talking before the show, the three of us and with our guest, Tal Yanni, who we'll be talking to in a second, kind of about how back to school starting. I actually took my two oldest and dropped them off at school today and was celebrating, not because I don't love my children, but I have 6 hours with her in school, and I can get work done while the baby sleeps, so it's great. So I'm excited because I'm finally back on a regular schedule versus the crazy summer schedule and the whole mommy went every time I sat down at the computer. So it's nice. That's kind of how some structure again. But I want to introduce our guest today. We have Yanni, who is a debut author. He teaches Hebrew and Judaic studies in the San Fernando Valley. However, in 10th grade, he was diagnosed with dyslexia. So I'm having a speech problem today, which explains his learning difficulties and did little to ease his frustrations as a young man. And during his struggles of youth every day, he started kind of turning inward to figure out what he wanted to do, and as he got older, he decided to set out and write a book called Life is Not a Candy Store. It is the way to the candy store, which invites teens to engage in both the critical process of self-reflection and the experience of connecting with the larger world and finding the higher power, if that's God or some other spiritual being. It kind of helps children just kind of figure out who they are and what the overall purpose of life is. Town is teen years, did much of this, as I said, and his goal is to help readers find new direction and purpose in a world filled with instant everything. So welcome to the show, Tal. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'm like all tongue-tied today. As excited as I am about that my kids went back to school. Unfortunately, my 18-month-old decided at 2:30 in the morning to have a complete meltdown and wake up.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
so I'm kind
dear.
Of a little sleep deprived at the same time, so I'm like not reading my notes very well. But we're glad to have you here, Tal. You were on, it was the Writing Mama show, right?
Right.
With Marcia
yes.
and I? Yeah.
Yes.
We just changed the show that we do together. Now it's What is Success? So I had to make sure I wasn't confusing myself. So, yeah, and we enjoyed having you on the show, and now you're doing a World of Ink tour. And so we have you on the show, of course, because that's what we do here is we talk to the authors who are doing the World of Ink blog tours, just kind of find out more about your book and to share about you as an author. And I've had the pleasure of reading your book more than once. Obviously, I read it back when you were a guest on the Writing Mama show, and then I read it a second time, getting everything prepared with the World of Ink host to have your tour in August, and then I got treated a third time when I was working on your book trailer. So I really enjoy your book, obviously, because I've read it multiple times, and I love the fact that it's a book that not only teens can enjoy, but you can also, as an adult, gain an inner reflection as well, and you know, goals and better understanding. And I know a lot of, especially now with adults and just the stress of what's going on with the economic market, it's a great book for that, because it kind of helps you come back to your basic roots and refocus your life. So in writing this book, I'm just kind of curious, and I may have asked you this before when we have chatted, but did you set out to actually only write for teens, or when you sat down, it just kind of emerged into being more of a spiritual guide for teens?
Well, I actually, the knowledge that is in the book, it's an ancient knowledge. I mean, people talked about it 2,500 years ago, and they said that they don't say anything new. So that's why when you read it, it talks to you, because human condition, it pretty much say the same. Technology changed, some aspects of our life changed, but overall, the struggles, the growing up, the raising family, keeping family, all those conditions are always been there. So it's true today as it was true 2,500 years ago. And so I wrote it because I observed around me, not just feeling my personal frustration and pain, before I discovered the higher power, because I grew up in a society, I grew up secular in Israel on a kibbutz, and then I had to come all the way to Los Angeles to become a believer. And it went, it happened in such a beautiful way that really opened my eyes and my heart to a different reality. And I kind of dedicated my life to explore that new reality and see how can I bring more people to that knowledge. But the pain that I saw people cause to each other, it was not only teenagers or kids creating pain around them, also adults. And that brought me to write that book. And later on, throughout the process, because I'm a teacher, because I'm a father, I decided to aim it toward teenagers more than toward adults, but with the understanding that parents can gain a lot from reading that book, and it should be kind of a way to open a dialogue with your teenager kid. And by reading that book and finding things that are of interest to both of you. So that teenager thing came throughout during the process.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree with you. I mean, I remember growing up and my parents constantly telling me, you know, the golden rule is always the golden rule. And, you know, my background is Christianity, and, you know, my parents were always like, you know, the things that are in the Bible are always, you know, the truths that are in there will always be the truth. And you can't, you know, you can't change what is, and, you know, drilled it into my head. And, of course, you know, as most teenagers, they just kind of look at their parents and go, yeah, whatever. And I know you even mentioned that in your book, that there was one point in your life where, you know, your parents didn't have much of an influence on you. And I think every teen goes to that. However, it seems like everybody comes to a point in their life, you know, as a teen, as a young adult, later as an older adult, doesn't matter, where you come to, you know, and you always talk about the different signs and the different roads you can take, and literally, you know, a fork in the road that opened your eyes. I know for me, it was my the end of my junior year. I had a friend who was gunned down at a party, and she was my best friend, and it really flipped my whole world upside down. Because I mean, as a teen, you think, oh, nothing like this can happen to me. And so that's when I really finally got back to my roots. And luckily, it was before I graduated high school. It was during my whole senior year. I mean, I just kind of put my head down and focused on my life. But reading your book, you know, it really hit home for me. Because it brought back those memories, and the fact that if that hadn't happened in my life, who knows where I would have been, because I was definitely part of the in crowd. And like most teenagers, you know, they tend to, when they get into the in crowd, you know, tend to party and drink and make some really bad choices that can really affect their life down the road. And unfortunately, something really bad had to happen in my life to snap me out of that. But, you know, I think it's great that now, you know, there's life is not a candy store. It's the way to the candy store for kids to pick up who are starting to travel down those dead-end roads to stop them and get them to turn around. So I love that. And I love that at the beginning of each chapter you have, you know, different quotes. You know, some are from anonymous authors. Some are from, you know, famous authors. Some are from, you know, just different people. You have Chinese sayings, you know, proverbs. I say proverbs.
The reason for that was that I really wanted to make the point that I'm sharing knowledge that it's out there. I'm just doing it in a way. I'm kind of giving my take on it, my perspective, my experience. That's what is for me. That's what makes the book unique to someone who reads it. Is that I open myself up in the book, and I share my story, and that's what it. And I write it in a simple language, and I hope that people will recognize that and will continue. It's kind of an introduction book to spirituality. That's why it's short, and I'm not going into real depth to explain every nuance. What I want you is to read it. I wanted to catch you and say, I want to explore that more. And then you will take another. But bringing different people from spirituality to science, I use there Freud and Einstein, to show you that it's from wherever you look at life, you can find that. It's not something that only you can find in religion or only you can find in spirituality. If your natural tendency is to go through science, to go through math, to go through music, to explore yourself through sports, you can do that. All I'm saying in the book is connect to that one force that unites all of us, that original energy, and through that, once you connect to that, then you are not alone anymore. Then you are not lost anymore. Now, take the time, understand where you are, and go enjoy yourself through spirituality, through religion, through sport, through music. But my goal is kind of to share that it's all over. Wherever you would look, you will find a sign that can take you to the next step. You don't need a specific teacher even. It's good to read. It's good to get ideas from others. It's what I do. Beside my personal experience, but it's not a must. You don't need to have a guru that will take you step by step. You do, you experiment, you try, you fail. This has worked for you. The other thing didn't work for you. You build your own way of experiencing.
I totally agree. My husband is a huge history buff, and you know, when I was working on your book trailer, he picked up the book and was thumbing through it and was reading it. And, you know, he was, like, pointing out, and unfortunately I don't remember because even though I like history, I don't memorize it like my husband does. I mean, we have, like, 5 or 6 bookshelves in my office that are just lined with his history books. But, you know, he picked it up and he's like, oh, this point is kind of like, and he started, you know, relating it to something that happened in history. And, I mean, and he's always telling our kids, you know, if you don't learn history, always doomed to repeat it, which again is another, you know, kind of point that you make, you know, in your book is, you know, the truth and things that happen, the cause and effects are always the same. It doesn't matter if you do something negative, you know, you're going to get negative, you know, reinforcement, negative effect, whatever, consequence in return. You do something positive, of course, something positive is going to come out of it. I mean, it's true. I mean, it is basic, simple truth that no matter, like you said, who you are, what you believe, where you are in your life, those things don't change. It's the way, you know, the laws of nature, you know, spirituality, whatever, work.
The only thing that would change is, because everything changes all the time, so the only thing that really changes is your understanding of it, your acceptance. That's why, actually, the last, in chapter 9, I put the last quote, actually, from a Jewish text, from the Talmud, when they said that who is rejoiced with his portion. It means that once you learn to accept what you have and you stop the jealousy, that craziness, that you look all the time what your neighbor has, what the guy or the woman on TV has, how much money here and how much money there, when you can enjoy what you have and you see that you have enough. And if you need a little bit more, you walk toward there, and you achieve that, but without that race against your neighbor all the time, because they have more. She's prettier than I am, or he has a bigger car. That's insane. So once you stop that, when you say, I'm not playing that game anymore, I'm going to enjoy what I have while working to achieve what I want. And that's the change that is called for right now, for people, individual people, to say enough is enough. And that's really the message. That's how the book starts. It's kind of stop, you know, stop, take a minute, breathe, know who you are, where you come from, and where you are going, and then move toward whatever you want to achieve, but with some sanity.
No, I agree. I don't know if Chris and Irene have anything to comment on that, but I know, especially with siblings too, you know, I definitely the whole keep up with the Joneses, watching your neighbor or coveting whatever is, you know, you see on TV that people supposedly have in life happens in the adult world. But I think even with children, when they have siblings, that happens. You know, you may have, like, for example, in my house, my son is really good with the computer. And one of my daughters is really athletic. And so they kind of compete with each other because there's things that he does better than she does and, you know, vice versa. And so there's kind of that competition, which is good, but sometimes I can see the jealousy kind of happen because one of them feels like, oh, you know, mom and dad are praising you because you're, you know, you're so great at soccer and I'm just a computer nerd. Or, you know, reverse for her would be, you know, mom can't figure something out on the computer and so you're over there helping mom and she never asked me for help and it's because I don't understand computers or whatever. And so I think sometimes, you know, even if it's not outside the home, it can happen with inside the home, especially between, you know, like I said, between brothers and sisters, because they each have different talents. And I think that they don't realize they don't need to be like their older brother or their older sister or, you know, whoever that they wish they were like. You know, they need to be happy with who they are and that their parents love them no matter what, you know, their talents are.
Yeah, I think that girls probably struggle with this more than boys, don't they? Or do they? A lot of times I, you know, watch teenage girls, for instance, and I volunteer at the local high school here quite a bit. And I find that they're comparing themselves, they're comparing their clothes, they're comparing their jeans, for instance, they're comparing who's slimmer, who's, you know, taller, who's shorter, you know, what one has, what one doesn't have, and so on. And there's just this constant comparison, there's constant almost jealousy, I guess, in many ways, too, you know, between friends even, you know, that one can't measure up to the other, for instance, or, you know, one can't quite be as beautiful as the other one, you know, and it really becomes pretty sad. So I don't know, do you think it's more between girls than between boys, or is it all right across the board?
It's across the board. I just think that girls let it be known easier, you know.
Yeah, is that right?
When they are
unhappy,
then every husband will tell you that. So it starts. It starts early. Boys, when they still the guy that is the best in baseball or football or basketball, he would be the most popular kid in the class. Not the smartest kid in the class will be there later, tend to be more successful. But the idea is here for a parent is really to see if you pay attention to it and you see that what they perceive as their downfall, it's actually their, in a way, later on can become their gift. And I was working with a kid that was very, very sensitive, easily crying for almost for nothing, and always get insulted. And one day I saw him in it was that event where kids from different ages were there, and all the young kids just came to him and just wanted to be with him. And I took him aside and I said, listen, this is it. Why do you think they are all attracted to you? Why they want to be around you? And we started to discuss it. And then in one point it came to the fact that he was sensitive and they sensed it. And instead of being with the big kids who didn't care about the young kids, they wanted to be with that guy who kind of felt their pain and cared for them and made sure they are, as it was during a bowling event, that they would have their turn. And they all turned to him, and he became that leader. So his sensitivity that he bothered him so much, that is power in life. And he will be a great leader because of it. So if we can point out to the kids, it's not always possible, but if we as adults, with our experience, because we know how things will, what we call the geek, the nerd, that nobody wants to talk to, he's the one that will, or she's the one that will become the scientist later, that will be the computer designer. They will be the guys and people like me, who I spent much of my early years on the soccer field. We have time later on, we have our time. We need to struggle to find ourselves, to reinvent ourselves. It's our responsibility to, if we can, to show your son that what he thinks is not good enough in him, that's actually a benefit in a way. If he would tune it, if he would take it up or down a little bit, and same thing with the girls. They don't have to be equal, but they need to feel equally loved and equally cared for. They don't need to feel that they are equal in abilities, because they are not.
Right. It's almost as they should turn inwards instead of outwards, you know, like if they turn inwards and they discover who they truly are, you know, their values and their beliefs and all of that, instead of looking outside, you know, to what others believe and others want and what the culture, for instance, defines, then maybe they can have a lot more luck in, you know, accepting themselves and getting to know themselves and perhaps finding that, you know, that wonderful thing that they truly are, that they can actually give to others, you know. Having that self-confidence is a wonderful thing. But maybe if they turned inward more than outward, maybe that would be the right way to go. What do you think?
That's actually the secret, because it takes time to realize that we walk in on, you know, two paths at the same time, the one that leads inward and the one that leads outward. And if you would look for peace and joy in the outward path that you walk on your job, on your how much money you make, how many friends you have, you will not find it there, because it's very bumpy. There are always, you have good times, you have bad times. It's only looking inward, walking inward toward your true self, connecting to God, connecting to the universe, finding peace there. It's where you will be strong enough. That's where you get the power to be strong enough to overcome the challenges that the road outside would give you. And that's a perfect, if you can find the balance there, because the road outside is really providing you those opportunities to decide how do you want to react, what kind of a person you want to be when you get a ticket. If you want to say, never mind, we paid, let's move on, or you want to start to get angry and argue and make your life around the ticket, and I will go to court, and I will debt, and you become obsessed with the ticket. And just for example, there are many, many examples all over, every day. So what kind of person, what kind of energy you want to create around you and to project, because that's what you are, that energy that you create. That's the energy that will carry you as an angry man or as a peaceful person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I'm kind of curious, Sal, because, I mean, Marcia and I, we really enjoyed when you were on the Writing Mama with us back in July. And then, you know, just listening to you here on the show, you know, talking with us about your book, Life is Not a Candy Store, do you have plans on doing any school visits or motivational speaking in the upcoming, you know, weeks, months, with especially now that school's, you know, gearing up to, in some places have started and then in other places will be starting?
That's really what I want to do full time. I hope that this book will really open the doors for me to speak to students, to speak to parents, and to speak later on. I want to write a book for teachers who want to teach to bring more spirituality into their classroom. But right now I don't have anything scheduled. But if you have an offer for me, I will be happy to come to Utah.
Okay, so all those teachers who are listening, make sure you go and visit Cal's website or which we'll have him give to you at the end of the show and contact him, because I enjoy listening to you. I mean, you're so motivating, and you know, and I agree with you. I grew up in the public school system. I now live in Utah. You know, I am in primarily, I don't want to say it's all Mormon based anymore, because it's not. It's probably like 40% LDS, but you know, there are a lot of people here that are very religious in the state of Utah, and it, unlike in California where I grew up, where, I mean, heaven forbid anybody even mention religion in the school, you know, here it is tied into a lot of the different school districts. And it's interesting watching the dynamics between the kids here and the kids in the L.A. County where I grew up, because the kids here seem so much happier. Even if they're not religious, you know, and they're not, you know, LDS or Catholic or Baptist or whatever religion, they seem more at peace with themselves and happier and more, I don't know, like more focused. Where when I was growing up, and even when my son, because he was, you know, we were living in California in his early years of high school, the kids just seemed more stressed out and you know, like as Irene pointed out earlier, more concerned about, you know, am I wearing the right designer, you know, clothing, and, you know, am I pretty or you know, thin enough to be a part of this group or whatnot. And it was so materialistic, and I know it still kind of is to some degree. I'm pretty sure it is a lot still out there. And unfortunately, I know Hollywood has a huge impact on that. So it's such a breath of fresh air to have, you know, an author like yourself who's not pushing a particular religion on anybody, but just saying, hey, you know, you need to step back and you need to reassess life here in Roy's, what's important and what's not, you know, and I just love that.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah.
Well, the reason it's because, I mean, again, I grew up, I'm Jewish, but I grew up secular. I had to come from all cities to Los Angeles, and it was through a Christian lady, a woman that I met here, that I started to believe in God, and It happened in such a wonderful way, where spirituality and God came together. I can't tell you today. I cannot say that there is one way to approach it. So I'm staying open-minded, and because this is my experience. So I don't think that you need to be one way or another whatever you believe in, whatever your life is around, you can find that balance in life there. Just look for it. Many kids don't look for it. It's not just the fashion thing. Here, when I was teaching in poor neighborhoods in the San Fernando Valley, I used to once a week to give him I taught 12th grade principle of American democracy to show you that you can bring spirituality to every subject. On Monday, we'll have a Monday morning warm-up where I will bring them one of those quotes that I put some of them in the book, and would write on the board three questions, and they're going to have to relate it to that, and they would have to answer those questions. And one time I wrote what in the book that Gandhi said, that be the change you want to see in the world. And we start to talk about what kind of change you want to see and how can you bring it. And many of them, and I didn't realize it until then, many of them wanted to change the fact that they cannot leave the house, their apartments at night because of the gangs. And they were very upset with the police, that the police just don't come into those neighborhoods and clean the neighborhoods from gang members. And I didn't want to tell them that it's the police. Tell the police they will do that. It's politics. It's not the police. But when you are afraid to leave your home at night, you are not focused. You cannot be happy. You cannot come to school. Very few would come to school and really concentrate on, yeah, I have to go to college, so I better score high. So it's even that's just basic of how do you show those kids, and they are 12th graders, so they are not kids anymore. How do you show them that there is another way, that there is a meaning for everything, that they can do the best out of their situation? And now I couldn't do it too much, in public school, but those Monday mornings, those 10, 15 minutes, would be enough to kind of just to touch them, just to make them think. And later on, to kind of put the seed. And later on, when the seed is ready, it would open. And they will find a way to explore it, some of them. But it is a problem with teenagers because they are so, there are so many things going on in their life. They have to be able to focus on what's important in life.
And I think they're looking for ways, too, aren't they, of finding something that's more meaningful, instead of just being fed by the culture, for instance, and everything else, that comes their way that's perhaps easy and out there, that they can focus on something that's maybe more important. And they're looking for something that's more than just here and now, I think, don't you think?
I think that they don't, because they don't know, and I'm talking from personal experience. As a teenager, I didn't look so much for something else, because that whatever I had, that's all I knew. So I was not curious enough to say, all right, what else is there? But my attempt with this book is, all right, you don't look right now, you are just unhappy. And you cannot really explain it. It's that inner feeling that you're just not quiet. But for me, until I didn't kind of open myself to the that new reality for me of a higher power, I didn't look for it so much. I just lived in that unease. And once I opened myself, all of a sudden, I realized what I was missing. I realized how much nothing was in my life. But until that moment, it didn't occur to me so much because that's the only thing I knew. So I want with that book, if it's through a teacher, if it's through a mother, if it's through a friend, the teenager will take that book and will read it. That's why it's very short. It's 72 pages. Uh-huh. And some of them would be one paragraph.
Yeah.
And the idea is, here, taste it. If you think that it's something that can help you, to find that peace that you don't know you're looking for yet, there is a way. There is a way for it.
Yeah, I want to say too, Tal, and this is, you know, completely, you know, from my own perspective of when I was a teen, but, you know, I took a lot of my life for granted. Not that I had a cush life. I mean, and I know on various shows that I've done, people have heard that my dad's a retired airline pilot and my stepdad's a retired dentist. But there was a time when my dad and my mom were divorced that, you know, I lived in low-income housing. Most people don't know that. A lot of people do listen to the show. But I lived in low-income housing, and so I can relate to the inner-city school kids that you were talking about where they were afraid to go out at night, because when you live in low-income housing, you're there because either you know, Social Security benefits are paying for you to live there, or you're there because you can only pay like $200 or $300 a month in rent, and so it's like a reduced kind of rent kind of place to be. And that was the situation that my mom and I were in, and she worked full time. She was a single mom, and I was the only child at that time, and it was really hard. But I still took my life for granted in the fact that I knew my mom was there to provide for me, and so instead of, you know, opening myself up and trying to find better things in my life, if something just came to me easily and presented itself that made me, you know, feel good and instant gratification, I tended to gravitate toward it, which I think a lot of teens do. My son, who has had, you know, obviously a more cush life than I've ever had, I see that he has a very lazy attitude. Instead of taking things for granted in his life, he's just lazy about it. He's like, if it requires effort, why do I want to do it? So if it comes easy to him, then he'll do it. If it doesn't, he won't. So, again, it's still that whole, you know, and I think, unfortunately, the things that usually come easier to you or make you feel good instantly are never good things for you in most cases. I mean, you know, that's why I think a lot of teens end up getting into the drinking and the drugs. Or, you know, nowadays a lot of kids are getting into the different, you know, sexual activities because it's that instant feel-good gratification. And unfortunately, the after effects are such a hard-hitting downfall, and they hate it, that they go right back into doing it again because they want to get rid of that awful feeling. And so it becomes this awful perpetual cycle. I mean, would you kind of agree that that's kind of what we're seeing, at least with society over over these generations?
Yes, and again, I think that's something that always been there. That's what I said at the beginning, that human condition didn't change much because we didn't raise our awareness. And that looking for something to feel better about life, because life is hard, so we try in alcohol and we try in drugs and we try in sex and we try in new clothing and we try in just watching TV all day, or it's almost, I want to say, normal for when your awareness is in that stage. But what you're looking for, and I saw it, I realized it for myself when I found a way to connect to that higher reality, and I found so much joy there, and so much freedom, spiritual freedom, and mental freedom. All of a sudden, I realized that's why people do drugs. They look for that feeling. Now, if you will do it through drugs, it will take you up and down, and it will just not be there. I mean, it will kind of elude you, tell you, try again, try again, try again. And one point you wake up one day and you have no friends anymore, you have no money. Depends how you know, what type of drugs you do. You will find yourself in jail. Whatever it is, you're destroying the cells in your brain. All the damage that you create to yourself, but it will be 10, 15 years later, and many times kind of almost too late. But this is the feeling that people can get for free and for much of the day if they would connect to that energy, what we call God, and leave that energy, let that energy live within them and be in balance with that energy. And then you can do whatever you want. Again, if you are into music, you play, but play together with God. Feel that you and God playing together the violin. It's a wonderful feeling. If you are an actor, act together when you're on stage. Feel that you it's the role of your life. It's you and God on stage, and you are one. It's such a wonderful feeling that you don't need to do drugs for that. You don't need to do to drink alcohol. Many actors, many singers, they drink and do alcohol before they go on stage, mm-hmm. because they need to feel high. They need to feel that they are performing at their best. Connect to that energy, and it will take you as high as you want. But it's normal for us, for human beings, to look for that high. I'm just thinking we look in the right in the wrong direction by turning to alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, we had a lot of dead ends.
Yeah, well, and I agree, because I used to be a long-distance track runner when I was in high school, and I joined the track team, and this was after I lost my friend. And I remember the first time, and you know, you always hear athletes talking about the zone, and it's a hard thing to get into and to really hit that high. It's called the zone for athletes, but once you get in as an athlete and you realize how to get there, it is, at least from my personal experience when I hit it, it was one of the best experiences. It outweighed ever going to all the different parties with my friends or all the other stupid stuff. Because you did it yourself, but you also felt the achievement and the success along with it, which you don't get from the artificial high at all.
That's where the parents come in, because the parents are really... We're supposed to guide. Teenagers have no experience. So they try mm-hmm. and fail and try and fail and try and fail. We have the experience, and it's where we need to guide. They still live under, you know, with us, that they are part of the family. It's where we need... I don't believe in really setting strict rules and you have to follow it just because I said so. That will take you somewhere, but it will not take you all the way, because nobody likes to hear that he or she has to follow just because somebody has said so. But through discussions, through reasoning, still you are setting the rules, so the last word is yours, but trying to bring them through understanding, through mutual respect, to look at different things. And our roles as a parent, from my perspective, is really to guide and protect. And for me, every soul is a child of God. So my kids, doesn't matter how old are they, when they were 2 years old, I looked at them and I said, there is a good chance that their soul is more involved than my soul. Just because they are here late, they came in a later date. So they will have better technology. They can do more good in the world than I can do. So I looked at my 2 years old with all the respect that I would look at the wisest man on earth. And so I still the father. I still have a job. But I raised them to a point where I can talk to them. I can explain them why I do what I do. I don't need to tell them, you have to do that, and that's all. If it comes to give and take, and it's too much, I don't want to do it, I want to do it, I don't want to do it, then would come the point where I say, all right, enough is enough, that's how we're going to do that. But I rarely use that because there is no need for it. And if it's come from mutual respect, then you can point to them things that even if they will not accept as teenagers, it will open something. It will leave a window open for later age to come and explore. And the idea that we're waiting for our kids to be perfect, I think it's a wrong idea. If my kids, when they turn 20, will be decent, good human beings, I did my part. And so that it takes a lot of patience, and you have to be strong and keep going, not kind of expect results right away just because you told them not to do something. They will never do it.
Yeah, no, I really like how the book was very concise. There are many things that I've wanted to explain to my children, and you know, sometimes they tune out because it's mom talking. So I really appreciated the easy way that I had my 11-year-old read it, that he could all read it in there and not just hear it from mom, but hear it from another person. So I really enjoyed the book, and my son did as well. So
I would like to hear from him. Just tell him to send me an email.
Okay, that would be great.
I know, because that's really the purpose, that it's to give the two of you a starting point. It's
right.
for you to point for him something and say, hey, what do you think about that? And just have a discussion. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't have there is no right and wrong there. The fact that 11 years old can discuss the material that is in a Life is Not a Candy Store, it's wonderful.
Right.
That's the purpose. He's not dealing with whatever they watch on TV there. They don't want to think about it. But they're doing something else. They're doing something with a higher sense of purpose. That's, if your son read that book, I done my job. That's it.
Yeah, well, he did. I talked to him about it. It was pretty cool. So I learned some things from the book, too, or it just hit home for me, you know, things that I've heard, but it was just a really well-written, warm book. So I appreciated it. So.
Thanks. And again, the idea is that I when I talk to my kids about that, I don't try to correct them too much. They express what they feel, because what the way that you read it when you are 11, or the way that you read it when you're 20 or 30 or in your 50s, would be always different. So each one will get from it something else. And so that is not necessarily right and wrong, but the fact that they can say what they liked about it or what they didn't like, or and just create a discussion. It's great. And always I let them, really let them talk, let them express themselves. I know from my experience as a teenager, when I express myself and an adult would tell me, yes, but, you know, a few buts and that's it. I have nothing to say anymore. If I am always wrong, there is always a but after what I say, I don't need to. It's that you just naturally you close yourself down. So the idea is to really let them express themselves, and the way that I would present a point, and when I discuss it, if it's my students or my kids, I will let them tell their side, their experience, and then I talk about myself. I tell my personal story where I deliver the point that I really meant to deliver in the book, but through my personal experience. So I'm not in any way judging their experience or what they say. I say, here is another way to look at it. And so there is no conflict there.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to be taking your book, Tal, to the school where I, of course, volunteer at the high school level. I'm a teaching assistant for a course called Human Christian Development, and I'm certainly going to be using your book and suggesting that the kids read it, because I think this is exactly what they need, you know, to open the discussion up about different topics such as God and soul and how to evolve and all of these things. But also, I think they'll get the deeper message as well. That's so much a part of that book. I really love your book as well, and I read it several times, and I've read it to my nieces and nephews, and they've read it themselves, the older ones have. So I am going to be taking it in September along with me to my various classes. So I really thank you for this wonderful resource.
You're very welcome.
Well, so that's what I was going to say is, you know, besides the fact that, you know, you open up in the book and you share your life experiences, you also have various activities in the book that help, you know, not just open up, you know, more communication between parents and their teens or teachers and their students or, you know, whoever's using the book, but, you know, it's a great resource in the fact that it doesn't, there's a lot of good books out there, I think, for kids that have great points, but they're very preachy, and yours isn't. It doesn't talk down, it doesn't preach, it doesn't, you know, shout at you like, well, why aren't you doing this? It's just a very, you know, warm, inviting, you know, well, think, you know, here's this for you to think about, or here's this for you to think about, or what about this? And I love that, because it's definitely a resource that, you know, a high school student can use, you know, a parent with younger kids could use on you know, subjects that are hard to open up and talk about with younger kids, because I think parents with younger kids have a really hard time, you know, trying to figure out, well, how do we address this kind of thing. But even, you know, when you're in college, and I love the point that you made, Tal, that with Life is Not a Candy Store, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're 10 or you know, 13, 20, 30, 50 years old, every time you go back to it, you're going to learn something new because your experiences have changed. Your growth has changed as a person. And so that's such a valuable thing in a book, especially nowadays with just all the garbage that's out there, unfortunately, to have something that's not like that, that you can keep growing from and learning.
It's written in such a way that it's not preaching, because my experience with, again, it's maybe unusual, but that's my experience with God. Mm-hmm. Coming to that point later, age 23, and not through a religion that teaches that there is absolute right here and those are absolutely wrong, but it was in such a way, and it's the last 18 years, of it's okay to fail, it's okay to try, it's okay to be mad, it's okay to talk to God in ways that your parents will tell you don't talk that way. Because it's that welcoming experience that I got, so much love. And I told the story last time I was on, how I got to that, and I don't think we have time for it. But it was such an overwhelming experience of love and acceptance. And that's the message in the book, is try. It's okay. And I really, truly believe it, that even if you decide that it's not for you, nothing happens. You will find your way. If not now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, next lifetime, you will find your way. There is no one, and I read it in another book, and I like that description, that where they said that there is no other game in town. The only game in town it's God, and it's a target big enough that no one can miss it. I truly believe in it. So if you take your time. When you feel that it's your time to turn, it's your time to change to get higher awareness. So because you don't want to feel that feeling anymore, that loneliness, that pain, it's not for you anymore. You don't enjoy it anymore. You don't want the suffering anymore. Then you come by yourself. Nobody has to push you. Nobody has to hurry you, because otherwise, who knows what's going to happen to you. You by yourself, you feel when it's time to move on and go to your next station. And that's why in the book it's presented in such a way.
No, I think it's great. And I love the fact, and I didn't ask you this before, but I'm just kind of curious, because I know it's written in a simple language, which I'm sure has a lot to do because it was, you know, directed into the teen and young adult market. But was it also written that way? Dyslexia runs in my family, and I have a speech impediment, so I tend to write a lot more in a simple form because of that. I don't, you know, once in a while I use big words, but typically I try and keep what I write very, you know, at a very basic reading level, so most people can read it, just because it's easier for me in general anyhow. So I'm just kind of curious, was that partly why you wrote the book that way, too?
Well, a big reason for it is, I know it's hard to tell, but English, it's my second language. And I made a promise to myself not to put a word that I cannot pronounce. So that left many words outside of the book.
That's pretty good.
Wonderful.
But it's great because, you know, someone who is dyslexic or, you know, has, like my daughter, she unfortunately inherited the speech impediment like I did. So for her, you know, it's a book that she can read without struggling too much, because I unfortunately, you know, which I know you would know, you know, because of the dyslexia, when you have those kind of learning barriers, I think that's one reason why you end up with a lot of reluctant readers, and so they tend to not pick up books, and unfortunately then they miss out on a book like yours that could really help motivate and help them find a new path or to help them outline the path that they've already started to set for themselves to become, you know, more successful in their goals in life. So I love that it's written that way.
Well, the idea, again, I didn't want to sit in a class having a discussion and somebody will ask me to read page 9. And I will look at the word and say, no, I don't think I'm reading that page out loud. But also what I said before, that what you think it's your downfall, it's actually your gift. And I think that the fact that I have a dyslexia, the fact that I was a frustrated reader and learner, would help kids in the same conditions to see, yeah, that's why it's simple. That's why you don't need to be anything special to read that book and to get it. It's actually the simplicity that gives that touch that everyone can feel welcome and feel comfortable, because we feel, I don't know even how to describe it, but we have that feeling that a lot of time, even for adults, that we are inadequate in what we're doing, sometimes as a parent, sometimes as in our profession, whatever it is, we just feel that we are not good enough. And, well, you cannot read that book and feel that you are not good enough.
True.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Very true. Well, Tal, can you share with our listeners your website so they can find out more about you and your book, Life is Not a Candy Store, It's the Way to the Candy Store?
Well, it's www.talyanai.com. It's all one word. And there is a little bit about myself, about the book, and also it can take you to my blog when I try to share some ideas that I have.
And then I know you said you're focusing on writing another book that was for adults. Have you thought at all about, after you've tackled your second book, to maybe write a book for the like preteen or older elementary school kids? Because I mean, I know they get frustrated too. And
well, right now I have two books that I'm working on. One is the second in the series, which will be Life is Not a Candy Store, for young adults, you know, for those who leave school and start life and find that you are a teenager, you are in a 12th grade, you think that everybody is waiting for you outside, you just need to go and make it. And by age 22, 23, so a book about that age and how to deal with those frustrations. And I also work about another book for teenagers that would deal with happiness and how to, you know, the importance of happiness and how to find it. Growing up, I didn't think it's important to be happy. Today I understand that it is important. It will help you to deal with much. But I didn't go yet. Maybe the next one will be for younger kids. That's more a children book, and not yet.
Well, we look forward to your next two books and any other ones that you plan on doing, because you have some great stories, you know, to share and new ways of looking at things for anybody, like you said, no matter, you know, where they are in life and no matter what they believe, because it's true, you have to have an open mind in life and to really know where you want to go, and unfortunately a lot of people still haven't learned that, and you know, some of us are lucky and learn it, and some of us, you know, like myself, you learn it the hard way by having something very traumatic happen in their life. But it's hopefully whoever's listening will think to open up the book before any of that happens.
Well, you even don't need to know where you want to go, but you kind of in a point in your life where you feel that what you have right now, it's not good anymore, it's not good enough anymore, and you know that you're looking, and you start looking. And because if you will wait until, I know exactly where I want to go, you might miss the train. So if you feel that you have that urge to look for something different, to explore, that's the right time to read this book and many other good books that are out there. Not all of them for teenagers. That's why I actually wrote for teenagers my first book, because there are not too many books, spiritual books for teenagers.
True.
Yeah, there's not. And so our listeners know, too, Tal is currently doing a World of Ink tour with Stories for Children, and you can find out more about his tour, see his book trailer, and visit the blogs that he's been to already and the blogs he'll be visiting before the month is over at storiesforchildrenpublishing.com. I got myself confused with our magazine site. And we want to thank you, Tal, for taking time and being on the show. Again,
oh, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you. And also for our listeners, Wednesday night is Simon Rose's show, Inspiration, Invention, and Imagination. And then on Friday, I will be back on with Marcia Cook for What is Success? And it is the, well, they've already had their year anniversary, but we're celebrating on the show Magic Blocks' year anniversary, which is a great online resource for parents, teachers, schools, and children. It's basically like an online library of children's books to young adult books. So it'll be a fun show to tune into on Friday this week. And that's what we have going on. We hope that you'll visit us again here on BTR's World of Ink Network and the Stories for Children show. Thanks, Chris and Irene, for joining me again today. And everybody have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Me to the World of Ink.